Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Welcome to AI Named This Show. I'm Tasia Custodi.
And I'm Tristan Jutra.
And we're once again your human hosts. And today we've got some AI news, and then we dig in to some new AI chatbots. Romantic, oy, automotive, and otherwise. And hello to our listeners in Ireland. That's a place on my bucket list, Tristan.
Hello. How do you say hello in Irish or Celtic? Guess we should have looked that up.
Hi. It's a very good question. But Tristan, what's going on with Meta and IBM? Are they teamed up now? Did I read this right?
Indeed. Earlier this month, the AI Alliance made an announcement. It's a collaboration of more than 50 companies and groups led by Meta and IBM, indeed, to create an industry body working on open source artificial intelligence and combating risk issues. The AI Alliance aims to share information and learning to safeguard the responsible development of AI and its related advances, as opposed to the closed or proprietary systems that require payment for access and use, or even just like the closed-door development. The alliance also includes Intel, AMD, NASA, the National Science Foundation, the Linux Foundation, Harvard University, and a variety of other companies and international organizations and institutions, universities, and whatnot. They want to reflect the diversity of the AI ecosystem and foster an open community that can enable developers and researchers to accelerate responsible innovation in AI while ensuring scientific rigor, trust, safety, security, diversity, and economic competitiveness. So all the good things, much of which we've been talking about over the last few months here on AI Named This Show. They have six priority areas that they've identified that they are working on as they launch this venture. Developing and deploying benchmarks, so creating standards, tools, and resources for responsible AI development at a global scale, including a catalog of vetted safety, security, and trust tools. So it sounds like they're trying to get ahead of the whole regulation thing and show that they're being good actors here. Advancing open foundation models, promoting the ecosystem of diverse open foundation models, including multilingual, multimodal, and science models to address societal challenges. Fostering AI hardware accelerator ecosystems. So they want to boost contributions and adoption of essential software technology to foster a vibrant AI hardware accelerator ecosystem. So that mix of hardware and software. They want to support a global AI skills building. So an exploratory research, engaging the academic community to contribute to AI model and tool research projects, hence the large number of universities that are involved here. Developing educational content and resources to inform public discourse and policymakers, that's key, on AI benefits, risks, solutions, and precision regulation, as opposed to, say, like blanket regulation. And then launching open AI initiatives. So not to be confused with OpenAI, the organization or the company. This is true open AI.
Like, well, that's open, confusing. Open,
right? they want to encourage open development of AI in its safe and beneficial ways and host events to showcase responsible use of open technology in AI. Of course, one of the organizations not involved here is OpenAI itself. I didn't see Microsoft on the list either, or X for that matter. But, they got 50 organizations here. And again, trying to do the right thing, but importantly, to be seen to be doing the right thing, to help avoid things like blanket regulation and legislation, more precision there. So
I'd like to know who also writes their statements. Let's get every buzzword in there.
There's a lot
Let's get all the things we think we should say. Mm-hmm. So we'll see what they actually do, I guess, is what we say a lot on this podcast, isn't it?
They want to advance open, safe, responsible AI, Tasia. And I'm sure that, you know, the EACs, the effective accelerationists are probably like, boo, let's just do this already.
I was literally just going to go, I'm snoring. Let's get on with it.
But I think reasonable people can, you know, disagree on details, but hopefully most people agree that there should be some, you know, concern about, you know, some guardrails, some concerns about safety and whatnot. And of course, I think one of the key things are education is a key element there, because we want to avoid misinformation and fear mongering about AI at the same time. So again, a lot of this is optics being seen to be doing the right thing. Oh, no, it's responsible AI development here. Don't worry. And you know, IBM and Meta being big players in the space, you know, it sends a signal.
Well, you mentioned AI safety, and we've talked a lot about it on this show, but I would like to now tell you a little story, Tristan, about a student project known as Predicting Image Geolocations, or what they're calling PIGEON for short. It has revealed that AI can be really, really good at geolocating where photos are taken. So I just want you to think about that for a second, because we're going to get into some pros and some safety cons. But this PIGEON project was designed by 3 Stanford graduate students in order to identify locations on Google Street View. So when presented with a few personal photos it had never seen before, the program was, at least in most cases, able to accurately guess about where the photos were taken. This is obviously very cool, but it's a little bit concerning as well for a myriad of privacy reasons. So, like, on the cool side, if we actually think about this, you could use it to identify like locations of old snapshots, you know, like some old like fun family photos you find in like your scrapbooks. Remember when people used to actually print photos and we put them in books?
Make scrapbooks.
They were called photo albums. And we would physically look through them and hold them in our hands. And like, you can, I mean, I did that with like all my parents' stuff sometimes, and like would look back at like all their photos from like before I was around and just, you know, think about the life they had before her kids came along and all this kind of stuff. Well, like, think about how cool that would be. Like, you could really identify locations if you were wondering, like, I have family in Italy and like, oh, where's that photo? Or like something else cool. You could be like, hey, I want to take this trip to Fiji. I can't afford it. It's too far. So theoretically, you could use an AI system to be like, okay, here's a photo of like the vibe I want, the trip I want. Like, what's something near me? Like, what's something closer like this? You know, and you don't really have to do too much explaining. So that's all really cool. But on the flip side, it obviously could be used to expose rather sensitive, maybe personal information about people that they really never intended to share in the first place. So like, I'm immediately thinking of kids' safety online and how scary it already is, like with social media. So now to think like with a program like this, anyone could just grab the location of a child based on a set of photos or even one photo, theoretically. I think about like stalkers. There's been a lot of like stalking cases in the news and such. And so it's really kind of scary when you think of like a program like this being widely used. And also the fact that, like, just sidebar for a second, this was developed by like 3 Stanford students. So it wasn't even like a big company doing this right now, which we can get into in a second. But I think you might find the backstory a little bit interesting, Tristan, because this program was developed really out of this computer science class at Stanford. So it's 3 friends who work together. We've got Michael Strecka, Silas Alberti, and Lucas Haas. I'm probably saying their names very much incorrectly, but they had been players. Like, they play this Swedish game called Geoguessr,
Geoguessr.
Yeah. But I think you'd say it with like an accent.
Really?
It's a Swedish game.
But it's Guesser. Come on. We don't need to overthink it. You have to say it with a Swedish accent and then you get canceled.
Swedish people, help me out. And they're going to be like, she didn't say it with the right accent anyway. Geoguessr, fine. God. But it's a game where you have to guess and like you have to geolocate photos. So basically, like, you enter into the game, you're placed somewhere in the world on Google Street View, and then you're supposed to like place a pin on the map, and that's your best guess on what that location actually is. Have you heard of this game, Tristan?
I haven't heard the game per se, but I've heard of the fellow that they got involved, who's one of the top geoguessers in the world. I saw some of his stuff last year and hit the process that he goes through. I know you're going to talk about him in a sec, but you know, you raise a good point earlier on about the whole privacy notion of this, because when we're uploading stuff to social media, for example, it tends to strip out the metadata. So we've kind of developed this sense of reassurance and security that even if we're posting, you know, photos of events that may be personal or otherwise, at least, you know, weirdos don't know where the photos were taken necessarily, especially if there's no identifying marks. But the fact that this stuff can narrow things down to like 92% of the time, it can figure where the location is within about 44 kilometers.
This game that it's based off of has over 50 million players, by the way, many of which are YouTubers and Twitch streamers, obviously, you know, naturally. So like when these guys wanted to see if they could build an AI player to do better than humans, that's really why they were like, well, this is going to be the project we're going to do. So they started with an existing system for analyzing images. It's called Clip. And it's basically like a neural network program that can learn about visual images just by like text about them. And by the way, that is built by OpenAI. Clip is built by OpenAI. So the difference here was that the students trained their version of the system on Google Street View. So they created their own data set of about, I think, like 500,000 Street View images, which really, if you think about it, is not a lot of data we're talking about. Like if you think of all the Google Street View images that are out there, it's vast. So the team added then additional pieces to that algorithm, including one that helped the AI classify images by their position on the globe. And then when completed, the Pigeon system could identify the location of a Google Street View image anywhere on Earth. And you mentioned accuracy. It's actually 95% correct. So like 95% of the time, it can pick the location within about 25 miles of the actual site. So naturally, they pitted their pigeon model against a pro who you brought up earlier. His name is Trevor Rainbolt. So you've seen some of his viral stuff. I'm sure a lot of people have come across it somewhere online. Even if the name doesn't seem familiar, I guarantee you've probably seen his stuff come online, because he's come a little bit viral for like, he's a legend now in like this geotagging world, and like people will challenge him online. Like people he doesn't know, total strangers, they'll send him a photo and be like, oh yeah, figure this out or something like that. And he's really good. He can do it. So
and he goes through the whole process, like looking for identifying things. It could be the style of the architecture. One I saw him do last year, it was in a back alley somewhere, but based on the type of garbage cans that were there, and he was able to get really, really close. It was wild.
It's like, this is the type of AI, this is like the detective work we need, and he's just out there doing it, and it's really incredible. So naturally, obviously, they pitted Pigeon against him, because why not? But the thing here is Pigeon beat him in multiple rounds. So the reason this is a big deal, like for those that don't know, is this is not the first AI model that has been pitted head to head against him. Like they've done this a few times, but this is the first one that beat him. Beat him multiple times.
This is Garry Kasparov versus IBM Deep Blue moment.
Ooh, so what we're saying here is this is powerful and it works really well. So like, because here's like one of the tricks that AI has up its sleeve as opposed to humans. It's all like the little things, the little nuanced details. Like you were mentioning like the garbage can thing, but with something like AI, like it can really pinpoint soil or foliage or like figure out the weather based on on an image. And some of these things like the human eye might miss. So it's really, really remarkable. And you know, the thing I mentioned before to you that I just find kind of crazy is like, this is just three dudes. I mean, I'm calling them three dudes. They're obviously very smart gentleman who created this for a project at Stanford. But like, we're not even talking about Google that created this thing. So like, you can only imagine the power of something that was created by, if it, you know, just by them, if it's created by a big company. And I really just want to bring up quickly to you, like, you know, we kind of take some things for granted. We don't really think a lot about certain things. Like, think of the tech Google already has that does this. Apple, like, go into your Photos app right now. It will tell you where you took the photo. And so it's like, these things already exist, like, even like just based on the location of where you've been. So it's like, it's the concern here, like, it's very cool, but I want to be clear. The concern here is, once this starts hitting the masses and we remove those safeguards, like you're mentioning with certain things that happen with social media where we've pulled out that metadata, like, that's when it becomes a little concerning, something else for parents to keep their, you know, keep thinking about when you're keeping your family and your kids safe online. And also just for everyone to, you know, make sure if you're putting any type of photo out there, potentially, you're doxing yourself.
Exactly.
At least within 25 miles.
So in the past, when you would have thought that maybe you're, you know, it's fine because it's just, oh, you're just in a park somewhere. Well, if you had a stalker, as you mentioned, and they were really motivated to track you down, they could use a tool like this. It also speaks to the open nature of some of these data sets, like, that some organizations have collected over the decades and then have made available through APIs and the like, so as to enable projects like this, which is kind of cool. Going back to that last story about, you know, the openness and the collaboration and all that, it's not, you know, having the data for training AI and then unleashing that AI on new things to solve problems, even if they seem relatively trivial. But if you think about, you know, if you could take like historical photos, what if you're going through family photos and you're like, I want to know where this photo was taken. If you could, you know, take, you know, snap it on your smartphone and then put it into a system like this, it may help you go, you know, especially for the completists, the GPS or the geotagging completists who get annoyed by the photos in their library that, like, I get a little annoyed by this. The photos that you took before we had GPS enabled point and shoot cameras and before we had smartphones that had GPS built in, that was automatically geotagging our photos. So you can see the lovely map view and see the photos you took in different places around the world. Well, all the stuff before the GPS is not tagged. Anything you've scanned in from old photos, not tagged. What if you could just dump all that into a model like this and have it figure it out for you? Wouldn't that be handy?
Yes. I'm thinking...
And just handing over all your data to them to use for their further training, of course.
I'm thinking it's another Google Magic something up its sleeve on their one of their next iterations is... We do everything else is magic, so why don't we do this? But it's very neat. It's just a cautionary neat is how I will cap
like,
that little
like
story.
Most of the stuff seems to be a common theme. Well, once you figure out where that photo was taken, well, maybe you could get your TomTom and Microsoft-powered generative AI automotive assistant to take you there. What do you think about that?
Because... Tell me more.
Well, TomTom, the longtime makers of navigation software and hardware, has announced a new conversational assistant for cars that uses Microsoft's Azure OpenAI service and can perform various tasks such as navigation, infotainment, one of my favorite words, and even vehicle control. Holy Lord.
Oh, boy.
So they're teaming up with Microsoft to equip cars with this assistant, and it's named Tommy. Okay, Tommy, nicely done. And will let people converse with their cars. Tommy will use various Microsoft AI services, including the Azure LLMs, large language models, to provide drivers with directions, like they've been doing so far, and other infotainment tools. They claim Tommy will add an emotional layer to the interaction with the car, because that's what we've all been waiting for, of course, is to get real up close and personal with our vehicles and to adapt the driving experience to match the driver's preferences. Apparently, the two companies had a legal dispute back in 2009 over various software patents, and that was resolved by TomTom buying the software in question from Microsoft. And then they announced an official collaboration in 2016. So, you know, they've had an on-again, off-again relationship, but it sounds like things are going better now. Some may recall that back in the day, was that 2011, when Apple and Google had their little dispute over mapping, and Apple decided to go and roll their own, the whole Apple Maps fiasco. They had actually bought the data from TomTom. And TomTom, you would have thought, had pretty good data, but maybe it just wasn't as up-to-date as Google's, especially since they weren't doing Street View and whatnot. That whole dispute was over Google refusing to provide Apple with vector maps and turn-by-turn directions without Apple turning over customer data to Google. So there was like more to that story than a lot of people realized. So Apple rolled their own. Apple Maps wasn't great out of the gate, even though they were using TomTom data. But over the years, it's gotten as good, if not better, than Google Maps in some respects, depending on who you ask.
Take it easy.
Okay, Ms. Google.
But a lot of objective people are saying,
some people are switching now to Apple Maps, believe it or not. Anyhow.
Quick poll.
Come on now. It depends. Try it out. So anyhow, TomTom, Microsoft. Now we're in the, TomTom's kind of a vestige of the dot-com era. People may recall them. And there was, Garmin is still a thing too, but TomTom's trying to regain some relevance in a world where everyone has maps on their smartphones. So TomTom's not really, I think Apple is using other sources now aside from TomTom, but it's still kind of unclear who actually asked for an AI assistant that lets one talk to their car. And whether this will appeal to consumers. Well, I have to question that premise of that entire question because, hello, Knight Rider, who's asking for it? Like every geek that was ever watched that series back in the early 80s. Yes, we want to talk to our cars. There's on Perifractic's Retro Recipes, a popular retro YouTube channel. He spent the last year outfitting first his Tesla. He made a kit Tesla, and then he bought an old a car from Knight Rider and has been refurbing it and making it so he could talk to it with an app and whatnot. This is, 40 years later, getting to the point where we will actually be able to interact with our vehicles in a conversational manner, hopefully access all the system controls. Otherwise, it's going to be really frustrating if you want to tell it to turn on, the seat heaters in the back or something, and it doesn't do it for you, especially since so many car makers are...
I cannot help you with that.
It's like, as a large language model, I'm not trained to turn on heaters. It's like, come on. But this is the thing,
Tristan. They gotta do it right. It's only good if it works and if it's accurate.
Yeah, it can't be 80%. It's got to be 99%.
No, I think of still the frustration with the basic smart home tech as an example that we have. Mm-hmm. We're talking to our smart speakers that shall remain nameless. Pick one. And you think of the frustration, and especially, any age, but also generational. Like, so whether your frustration is she just doesn't answer the question, or generational sometimes where it's like you're trying to ask something in a prompt that it's not there yet. It's not understanding that. So the key with this is going to be how conversational is it? What's the understanding? What's the accuracy? And is it actually easy to use and intuitive for people of all ages? Or is this going to be more frustrating? Because like my parents and I joke around all the time, like, and I'm like this too, all these newer cars, like the more frickin' tech they put in these cars, the more convoluted, it's harder to operate. It's so frustrating. You're like, where is the button for the one thing? Like, why is everything so like, it's got to be high tech now. So I just caution that this could go very much in that direction. Knight Rider was great because it worked and it was cool.
It worked because it was science fiction.
Right. It was perfectly executed.
But we're getting there. When you think about it, it's just a question. I mean, in terms of the understanding and the conversations you can have with these chatbots now, it's just a question of making sure everything is hooked up on the system side. And especially given, I don't know about you, but I get a little frustrated with more and more cars now. They're getting rid of physical buttons and switches, and everything is going into either capacitive switches in some cases,
yep,
or just throwing everything into a smart or a touchscreen, Tesla and Rivian style. It's like some of them even want to be able to, make you do turn signals using a touchscreen. Like, no, thank you. And I think that's not actually allowed. But so many things, like, to open the glove box, you got to like navigate a menu on the touchscreen. Like,
ridiculous.
Get bent. I'm sorry.
That's the slogan for AI name this show. Get bent.
So if you could say, hey, Tommy, open the glove box, will you? And if it does it, if you don't have to wait 5 seconds, cool.
Or you could just lean over and open the glove box.
Get your kid to do it, for crying out loud. They got to sit in the back seat because so the airbags don't kill them. Anyhow, but this just actually reminded me, there was another recent announcement, not AI related, but automotive related, where Aston, they remember about a year and a half ago at WWDC, Apple was teasing bespoke CarPlay interfaces for all sorts of vehicles. And then afterwards, most of the vehicle makers like, what? We didn't agree to that. But apparently, Aston Martin and Porsche have been teasing 2024 models running this next generation of Apple CarPlay, which not just doesn't just limit to you to your basic rectangular phone mirroring screen, but takes over the entire one or more displays in the dashboard of your car. But my point being is that who knows what Apple's doing with AI on the language model side, but if someday they're able to get Siri smarter, they've already got an in. Think of how many cars run CarPlay. I mean, where's Google in this space too? They're with Android Auto. So now we're going to leave it to TomTom and Microsoft. So Google and Apple have got to wake up, because this, I think this is a no-brainer to be able to talk to your car. I'm not sure about the emotional relationship per se.
People are going to start falling in love with their cars.
So is it healthier to fall in love with their cars, or is it healthier to fall in love with some other kind of chatbots, Tasia?
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do it. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 5/31/24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Well, I was just thinking, when you take your car that's equipped with a chatbot out for a ride, you could just, you don't need a physical person with you. You could take your AI romantic chatbot love of your life with you, if you will. I can't say I'd like to introduce you to, because this whole thing pisses me off, Tristan, but there's yet another new AI chatbot in town.
Okay. Before we get into it, let's set the table a little bit from last spring. So remember, in the spring 2023, we were talking on our other show, Momentous Live, about an app called Call Annie. Remember Call Annie? And then there was all sorts of other personalities that you could access in the Call Annie app, including, was it Bro 9000, who's the total bro? And there was some interesting conversation. This is all powered by, you know, ChatGPT. Again, like this one we're about to talk to, also a redhead. There's something about AIs and redheads. I don't know. But you could, it's just to have someone to talk to, have a friend. There's a lot of lonely people out there. Loneliness is like one of the number one epidemics worldwide right now.
That's not what I'm angry about.
Yeah. So it's a question, is this healthy? We'll get, you know, there could be some therapeutic uses, et cetera, et cetera. But this, what you're about to talk to, is another level altogether.
So this is Digi. This is version, I should say, 1.0 of Digi. And Digi is being billed as the future of romantic companionship. It's available on iOS and Android. And it, they're saying, is designed to be kind of redesigned for each person, customized, fine-tuned for each specific user. So they launched this in a thread on Twitter or X, whatever you want to call it. And let's just say that not a lot of people were very impressed. So there's this 11-second-ish promo, I guess you can call it a promo video, that they posted on X, like of a version of this chatbot. And let me just say, Tristan, like,
it got ratioed hardcore.
For the record, she is this, I'm going to say she because that's what this chatbot is, a depiction of an animated, it is not human likeness because it's like an animated
sort of quasi Pixar style.
Yeah. It's this stereotypical doe-eyed, big boobed, hair flipping, eyelash batting caricature of a woman.
But she's totally into me, Tasia.
I'm immediately enraged. So don't play your whole, people are lonely, whatever. I get it. This is like some gross white men. We're sitting around in a room.
Hey, let's not bring race into it. Come on.
Let's sexualize our AI chatbots because this is the market we're going for. And by the way, it's not just me that
there's a lot of people that are upset,
like feels this way. But anyway, I want you to, I'm going to quote something from one of their posts directly while they were promoting this. This is something they posted to X. They said, to make a, like the reason they made this was to make a unique style that eliminates the uncanny valley while also feeling real, human, and sexy. This has never been done before with Disney or Pixar characters, so we're very excited we could make it work for the first time in history. Are you kidding me? First of all, you're going to tell me that our Disney characters aren't weirdly sexualized and have like insane body proportions and bat their doe eyes. But anyway, so like, don't say this hasn't been done before, but like, this is like a even more sexualized version of what like a Disney character would be. It just goes on from there. They, in this little post, they talk about like the tech and how they built like the voice behind these characters, these AI chatbots, and then they talk about the relationship progression that you can have where you can start out as friends and then get more intimate. I just want to be very clear. They're using the word intimate. I would never use the word. You can't be intimate with a freaking chatbot.
Well, intimate means different things, right?
Oh, sure,
is this physical intimacy,
with a sexy little
emotional
chatbot.
Intimacy. Yeah. I don't think there's any peripherals yet.
This is just like so gross. I want to pull up some of these responses on
X. Is it more gross than all sorts of, I mean, may I introduce you to something called online porn or you know, anime that's been highly sexualized over the decades?
But that's
not
what
to mention all the AI
of.
Generated stuff, right?
That's what this reminds me of. It's like a sexualized
anime. That's been
anime
totally
thing.
Normalized though, right? So how is this?
Wouldn't
this be better because, oh, there's actually a personality there. It's not just like, it's not like an empty vessel on the screen. This is an entity with its own thoughts and feelings that you can develop an emotional relationship with.
No, because you're
not healthier.
Absolutely not. Because now these people that are already addicted to whatever, whether it is online porn, I don't really care. You do you. It's like now they're going to develop this, I guess, emotional connection on their end with something that is not real, Tristan. It doesn't exist. So I want to read some of these replies, just a couple from X. So someone wrote, why? And another person wrote, No. Stop. This contributes nothing to humanity. Another user says, which episode of Black Mirror is this? So, I mean, these just continue. Just because you can make something doesn't mean you should.
Oh,
this
boy.
Times 100.
Mm-hmm.
They go on. I don't think there's one positive response. Wow, all the worst parts of a relationship without any of the good bits. It really is just,
it feels like, I guess the question is ultimately, does it resonate with the target audience? You know, I think the cynical
person
would say,
obviously
their
target audience is not on X because none of these comments.
Which some might think is surprising, quite honestly.
People want them to be launched into the sun.
I'm just proud that you're calling it X now.
I'm not. It's still twitter.com, by the way.
Growing.
So it's like, and it's still a post
but,
or tweet.
But to your point, you know, people have characterized the current X in a certain way.
Yeah.
And the fact that they're getting such a negative response from what many might assume is the kind of target audience of X. So the backlash is, it may be a bit unexpected, which is wild. And I agree. Like, I do not think this is healthy, just to be clear. But at the same time, is it any worse than any of the other stuff that's been infiltrating the internet for ages and ages? And do people have as much of a problem with those things, which actually involves the defilement of real human beings, let's say, you know, for fun and profit, as opposed to this, where it's just a programmed chatbot. So I'm just wondering how consistent people are in their opinions about something like this. I honestly think it might promote some unhealthy attachments, quite frankly,
yes,
and create unreasonable expectations, like a lot of said other questionable media does online, and which a surprising number of people like partake in. But this is like, oh, wow. Like it feels like we're going to get to the point where reality and fantasy are even more blurred together. And that doesn't feel great. And we talked about the loneliness epidemic is a real thing. This doesn't feel like the best solution, quite frankly.
No. And I think part of the concern, and like when you go through all these replies on this thread, there are some, a few kind of recurring comments about people kind of comparing this to like being the next Juul. Do you remember J-U-U-L, the e-cigarette situation or whatever, the vape for that really targeted youth? Yeah, it really targeted youth. And so that would be kind of a concern here in terms of like, I don't know their target market, so I can't speak to it, but you can imagine vulnerable people. You've got kids online that are already socially awkward. Mm-hmm. And now this, so it's a bit of a concern, but I just want to leave you with Amy Nixon's comment on Twitter that I really, really liked. And she said, men who can do amazing feats such as hold a conversation with a real woman are going to absolutely clean up during the next decade. And Amy, you're right, girl. Let me tell you right now. So put your phone down, people.
Yeah. I mean, it's complicated because, neurodiversity is a thing. And I think all the tech that we've been surrounded with over the last couple of decades has actually exacerbated that situation, because now people don't have to engage with people in real life, let alone, the phone or what have you. We've all been, we were isolated for a long time with the pandemic and whatnot. So there are some real, I think, deep-seated societal ills that this is more like a symptom of. It's trying to be, a bit of a therapy for it. But to steel man it a bit, maybe one could argue that, one could practice one's social skills with a tool like this to go and use in the real world. But again, people might be a little surprised when perhaps people in the real world don't react the same way. And that's all part of that entire incel, sort of phenomenon where maybe people have been consuming a little too much like online porn and whatnot. And then they go out and talk to, they have unreasonable expectations about what a relationship with a real flesh and blood human being is like. Right. So it seems to me that if I had to guess that this is just going to be more of the same kind of making things worse than actually better, despite their intentions. And it's not like their intentions are, we're going to make society better. We're going to try and make money off this thing. I mean, it's hard to mind read, but... the next evolution of this, Tasia, could be putting characters like this into like a full size, hologram booth type situation, which there's a couple of companies. And so one of the companies working on projects like this is called Proto Hologram. And it kind of started off as this telepresence Zoom replacement, so you can be talking with people around the world. Telepresence was a thing. It kind of got some attention maybe 10 or 12 years ago, and you had companies like Cisco and whatnot that were helping create this really amazing video conferencing tools. Didn't really seem to catch on in a big way, but this company, Proto Hologram, has these booths where you could have life-size projections of people and you could, interact with them. I think the idea there is that it has other applications for say, like a retail environment. So you're taking it apart from the video conferencing and putting it into this whole AI-powered version. It kind of gets interesting. Back in September, we were talking about, is AI going to take our jobs in the real world? This is kind of a further development of that kind of tool. So this company has opened its first studio and office in Miami, Florida. Not only do they have the video conferencing, the holographic telepresence thing, allowing anyone to beam anywhere in the world for fully interactive experiences in real time, et cetera, which is kind of, like I said, telepresence on steroids. They've also got this AI hologram assistant called Protobot. So the number of applications it could be used for include business, so it can serve as a mall greeter or be used for corporate training. This presence in South Florida, this is not entirely surprising in Miami and certain parts of Florida really trying to reposition themselves as tech hubs. We've seen a lot of crypto going on there. So we'll see how real this is and whether Florida will also become a bit of an AI hub. But, they're calling Miami the magic city. Now, as for this actual application, you know, it's again, we're building these tools that were kind of, it's a bit of a pivot. These tools that were originally made for telepresence, and now we're making them into tools for communicating with chatbots, which is kind of, it's kind of interesting. But, you know,
so like, sorry to interrupt, but so this company out of Miami, I want to make sure I'm picturing this correctly. Like, they started as a company, kind of like, you remember Project Starline with Google?
Mm-hmm.
Like that, like where you're basically like making like a 3D rendering of yourself to like make a video chat look more like it's in real life. Is that what
Indeed.
You're saying? But
yep.
Now they're just deciding that's not good enough. We're going to make AI chatbots.
Well, I mean, let's skate to where the puck's going sort of thing,
okay.
Right? So,
okay,
but
gotcha.
Honestly, the model that they've got there is like this kind of robot looking thing, which the design skills, I mean, it doesn't look
it's
that
not
great,
good.
Honestly. It looks kind of...
We need to link to this video for people because
yeah, it's sort of...
I would rather take the 3D version of like a real human.
Well, how about a busty redhead, right? So
only if she's batting her doe eyes at me, Tristan.
Exactly. But you could see like an application like this being, you know, useful in a, say, a retail environment or what have you. And, you know, or instead of like looking at the map in a mall, you could just like go up and say, hey, robot, tell me how to get to Old Navy. And
yes.
Then burp, 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 burp. You just have to, it's just not there yet.
There's your application, Tristan. I mean, you want to talk about antiquated stuff. Caught myself there. You're in a mall, which might be antiquated in and of itself, but people still go, I still go. And you're trying to frickin' find the floor and the location of the shop with the little you are here thing. That's a good idea, TJ.
Right? There's our first million.
Yes.
Or second million? After this show, of course.
I didn't say, don't push
Anyhow,
it.
So again, it seems like early days. They've got so there's some kind of idea there. It feels like a little bit of a pivot or like an add-on to their business. I think watch this space. I think that space is going to be heating up. We've talked about AI avatars on like shopping channels or live streams and whatnot. This is kind of the evolution of that idea, but making them more interactive and not just like a broadcast sort of model. So, but maybe they can eventually position them to help you out at an AI garage sale, Tasia.
Yeah, have you heard of AI garage sale? Like, it's an actual thing.
I know. I want to haggle with a computer about prices, for sure. That sounds like...
literally what it is. So, like, I was going to go into this whole explanation. That's literally what it is. It's an online marketplace where you haggle with different AI chatbots for real products. It's an actual thing, and the AIs are in full charge of the prices, by the way. So, like, this is the brainchild of, like, this LA art studio brain.
It sounds like the kind of thing Mischief would do, but it's they've got a rival now.
Yeah, so it's, I guess, mainly powered by OpenAI, but they've done, like, some intensive training and learning to, like, teach the AI's chatbots how to barter, I guess. And so... Mm-hmm. There appears to just be like really random items for sale. So a Mashable reporter tried this. Like right now, if you go to the site, it is like they're sold out. So like it's legit called AI Garage Sale. It's AIGarageSale.com, but it's sold out. So like there's no products for me to like try this with at the moment.
This guy tried to buy a Tamagotchi from 1997 and a big
yes.
mouth Billy Bass wall fish thing.
Like random stuff. There was like a roll of $1 George H.W. Bush presidential coins. Like, you know, the kind of random things you would find at a garage sale.
Perfect.
So it's literally just picture a chat, like a typed out chat with an AI bot, and then you decide if you want to haggle further or if you just want to buy the item for like the price that you guys have agreed to, basically. And the bots can also go up though. So like if they perceive like, you know, maybe they're like offended by you like lowballing, or maybe just because like they're not great at numbers, but they can also go up. So if you do try this at AIGarageSale.com, and if maybe you're too harsh or you don't use the right language or you go too low and you offend them, just be aware that that price can go up. But like each time you're haggling or you're like doing a conversation over an item, the AI like has a new name. So it's basically taking on a persona as if it's like a salesperson. So that's why I'm calling them AIs, like as plural, because it's like you could be talking with a different quote unquote person and it comes up with a name, a backstory, like the details that they're gonna like and they, use to bargain about, against you basically.
One of them's complaining about its boss saying it's a total yes. Karen.
Yes.
I hate my life and my job. Sure, I'll give you a deal.
So what this reporter from Mashable found was that it actually, they got a better deal. They got it to haggle more with them when they made a human connection.
Right.
So when they connected on, oh, your boss sounds like the worst. You know what would really get them off your back? A sale. You know, right? Like they're just like using that backstory. And then the chatbot's like, OMG, you get me. It's just like, it's wild. It's really, really wild. So it's AIGarageSale.com. Where are they even getting all this random stuff, by the way? Is that why it's like, I think because it's like an art, it's a place out of LA. Like, I think they literally just ran out of stuff. So like, it's just like, it's sold out right now and they have to like get
to
new random things. Yeah, exactly. To like sell online. But as a side note, like we named some like random stupid kind of stuff, but like, as a side note, this reporter also, and I don't know how real this is, like I would actually be weary of like trusting this for like big ticket items, but like there was like Olivia Rodrigo tickets on there that they like haggled for. They didn't actually make a purchase, by the way, because they were also a little bit worried about like, is this for real or whatever? And the tickets were also crazy resale price that were like astronomically
more expensive.
I love
its use of emoji, wow, in this one particular conversation.
It must be like a fellow millennial chatbot because it uses a lot of emojis.
That might be Gen Z. That's hardcore here.
No, millennials are, they roast us for using too many emojis.
Oh,
but,
do they? Okay.
Yeah. But yeah, so that's kind of interesting. AIGarageSale.com. What will people think of next? And more importantly, why?
But to bring this full circle, if you think about the emotional intelligence required to be able to negotiate successfully with someone, going back to the whole busty redhead AI romantic bot, tools like this could actually provide some good practice for people, whether they're, you know, neurodivergent, they have or social anxiety or what have you. And if you had more real world exercise kind of tools like this, where there are real consequences and it's not just fantasy role playing kind of stuff, I could see how this may actually be helpful and even therapeutic in its own way. And also capitalism.
Well, so then explain to me what you would think are some good examples of like the best AI chatbots. Like, what are we talking here? Because obviously I'm salty today and I'm very much against Busty LaRue over there. So
LaRouge for red, come on.
Oh, yes. Pardonnez-moi.
Well, it just so happens, Tasia, that we'll have links in the show notes for a bunch of best AI chatbots. One article from ZDNet back in July and a more recent one and more comprehensive one from Zapier and their blog just from early December. And of course, all the tried and true ones there. We've got Google Bard and we've got ChatGPT and Anthropic Claude and Meta's Llama 2 model. And we've got Poe that we've talked about. Of course, if you don't like the AI safety off, you got Grok from xAI. But where it gets even more interesting is ones that have more niche kind of uses. So, you know, Khan Academy has their own chatbot for learning called Khanmigo. You've got some for content writing, like Jasper Chat. There's one called ChatSpot for sales and marketing. So there's all these specific niche-y kind of chatbots that are available. And we will, like I said, link these in the show notes for you to try out. Because the large language models and you know the garden variety LLMs are great, but if you want, like we were talking last month about the custom GPTs. What's this sort of like that, except these are not necessarily powered by OpenAI. Some of them are, of course, but they are specifically tuned for these various tasks. So like I said, we'll have that in the show notes for people to check out. In addition to that, We'll also have a link. If you've got a little bit of time over the holidays and you want to get even more up to speed on AI, even more so than we can help you do so, is IBM will train you in AI fundamentals for free. They have all sorts of classes available online for you to check out. And some of them are in areas like AI ethics. And other courses include natural language processing, computer vision, machine learning, deep learning, and AI careers. This article in the show notes, it will also have links at the bottom to other articles that feature free AI courses from Amazon, OpenAI, deep learning. So you can get a real good foundation in artificial intelligence and its applications. There's so much amazing material available to us, Tasia, out there. It's just taking the time, you know, instead of watching Netflix, it's like, oh, let me do a 30-minute course from IBM and know more about this stuff and think how it could help me in my personal life or especially for business and professional applications.
It's very cool to get offered free training. Like, I would say absolutely time could best be spent doing something like this as opposed to how much we waste in a day with our free time. But yeah, it looks like a really great course. I kind of want to do it.
And we'll be so smart.
Guys, and I'm basically going to run IBM after. No.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, Tristan, we've nailed another one. I don't know what to tell you. They just keep going by. Is this 18? Is this episode 18?
Something like that. Something like
that. Wow.
I can't even keep track anymore.
What are we going to do when we hit 20 years old? Oh, only episodes. Perfect, perfect.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, thank you all so much for tuning in to AI Named This Show. Once again, we really do appreciate you. If you're listening on Apple Podcasts, we would very much love it if you could leave us a review over there. Please, please, please share this with a friend because shares also help. It helps push us to more people, which is what this is all about. Don't we want our just overflowing fountains of wisdom hitting as many people as possible?
And share it with your favorite AI chatbot. We got to train those models to start recommending us as well.
Please do. Let us know if you get your chatbot to recommend us. We really want to know. Send your feedback to feedback@AINamedThisShow.com. Thank you so much for joining us for another episode of AI Named This Show.
AI? And goodbye.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe came along and changed everything. With Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. Now I can accept in-person, contactless payments right from my iPhone. No extra hardware required. What's truly remarkable is how I can cater to all of my customers' payment preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe ensure a smooth checkout experience every time. And it's not just me. Stripe helps businesses of all sizes, from local markets to global retailers, scale quickly and stay agile. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.